The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report from Monday, November 27th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In just a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. In agricultural news, the Congressional Budget Office begins putting together its baseline projections for Farm Bill 2007 this week. Also, Farm Credit Agency continues to have problems with payments to producers. I'll have these and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will report on growing markets for soybeans that have nothing to do with biodiesel. It's all on the Monday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for the representative nearest you.
Monday afternoon, prices settled like this in Kansas City, December wheat. 5.18 down 3, March 5.36 and a half down 1 and a quarter. At the Board of Trade, December wheat 4.90 and a quarter down 9 and 3 quarters. March 5.14 down 5, May 5.16 and a half down 4. December corn 3.71 and a half up 2 and a quarter. March 3.88 and a quarter up 2 and a quarter. May 3.94 and a half up 3 and a quarter. December 367 and a half up 6 and a quarter. January soybeans 688 up 3 and 3 quarters. March 702 up 5 and a quarter. May 710 and three quarters up 6. Redline November 733 and a half up 8. December soybean meal 195.90 up 110. December soybean oil 29.11 up 22. At the Merck January feeders, 97.62 and a half down 87 and a half. December live cattle, 86.62 and a half down 102 and a half. December lean hogs, 62.45 down 52 and a half on the day. Joining us now on the phone for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Good morning, Kurt, or good afternoon, rather.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, I guess we have good news in that we had contract highs in corn and soybeans for producers, but a little bit frothy at the top.
Yeah, we had a real active overnight trade where it carved out some of those highs, and during the day session, we opened firmer and gave up the gains in the corn, but beans stayed higher most of the session. Been nice for the bulls to see a higher close at the upper end of the range, but how we're closing higher on the day is a strong sign after threats of lower markets. The market did see some jitteriness or uneasy thoughts when the Deutsche Bank came in and sold quite a bit of wheat and corn on the day. There was panic that maybe the funds were liquidating some of their long position there, but wasn't a huge amount of contracts, but it was enough to give the market a little bit of panic for a little while. But the way the market came back and finished with the plus sign there signals there's still some underlying strength under it.
And for the first time since 1 April of 1996, a corn contract with a 4.
Yes, the July futures overnight traded as high as 4.02 and a quarter, so if you're going to be nitpicky, maybe the front end needs to go there. But for the most part, we saw corn trade $4. And, of course, the back ends in the beans has been over $7 here for a day.
So what do we make of this? Is the market beginning to feel a little toppy to you, at least in the next 2 or 3 weeks short term?
Well, I think we're reaching some upside objectives here that could warrant some backing and filling, per se, but you know, the market's in strong hands in through here. It's sort of showing some negative signs, which gives guys reason to buy it, which is positive in through here. But up front, the lead contract at the 275, 375 area has been sort of an upside target, and we're here, so it warrants me, you know, from a producer's point of view, to let a little bit more cash go. Same thing on the January beans. You know, we're approaching $7, and that's probably going to be a benchmark to go by. The overall trend remains higher, but we're overbought. This, RSI levels are 73, indicating overbought, but good bull markets stay overbought, like good bear markets stay oversold.
It's kind of amazing to me that we even found a couple of rounds of selling today with the funds still buying.
Well, there's going to be some zigging and zagging, per se. When it's all said and done, you need to sort of watch the volume and open interest and see whether open interest goes up or down here on these rallies and breaks to see what magnitude of shifting around. But for the most part, you're going to start hearing month-end, maybe position squaring as we look towards the end of the month here this week. Also, too, timing on this stuff. Some of the analysts were projecting here first part of December we could probably have a high in place here for the winter and maybe some year-end liquidation. But for the most part, the trend remains higher.
What do we make of the fact that it's the beginning of a new month soon, end of a current month, in relative to what the index funds might be willing to do given their history?
Well, typically they've been buyers at the first of the month. They seem to be gathering some new investment money. And that's what panicked the trade here during today's trade, with the one of your bigger investment funds selling, being a net seller. You know, that's sort of unheard of. They like to buy and hold, and this is the fund that buys and hold that was a net seller here through the mid-session here. But for the most part, they like to come in and buy the first of the month as they bring new money into play in here. But you got to watch them pretty close, because when they start becoming net sellers, it could say that maybe the public's disenchanted with the returns, with the gold market taking a hit there for a while and crude oil taking a hit there for a while. So all eyes would be on that. But the big thing will be the commercial play at the end of the week on the December deliveries.
And what is your tea leaves showing for that?
Well, it's typical. Commercial's going to put the deliveries out, let somebody play storage and interest on it for a few days. You know, when we start getting through the delivery process, they'll be willing to take it back and regain ownership of it. It's the ritual that takes place about every 2 months. So when it's all said and done, with the strong demand base we have coming at us as we go into 2007, I think there's going to be willing ownership. If you do have big deliveries, there's no adage to buy the big deliveries. So when it's all said and done, I have feeling any type of break going into December deliveries will be bought.
Over 4,000 contracts queued up for potential delivery, is that right?
Well, it's going to vary as it moves in and out of deliverable position or being registered for being delivered on. Back in the olden days, mid-80s, we used to have 6,000, 8,000 contracts delivered, and that was bearish. Today's atmosphere, that's just one half hours buying spree the funds.
Over on the Merck, a lot of red ink on the screen today.
Well, with higher grain values, it's got the meat sector in question here. You know, if this corn goes on up to this $5, $6, $7 levels, which some of these analysts are projecting here, you know, is the livestock guy going to be able to afford to buy higher priced feed inputs? So, you know, there's still a question mark there. Also, too, we're seeing a situation where South Korea sort of putting some of our beef imports on hold here for a second due to bone fracture being found in one of the beef loads from the U.S. here. So we're sort of in a pattern here where the beef and pork sectors might not have a good friend here. Seasonally, though, as we go into the 1st of December, seasonal ham demand picks up, and we see the hog market rally into the middle of the month of December.
Thank you very much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel of Grain Field Marketing in Normal, Illinois. Kurt joins us every Monday afternoon on the Closing Market Report. Taking a look at Mike Sola's two-state forecast tonight. In northern Illinois, cloudy with rain. In the remainder of Illinois and northwestern Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. In the remainder of Indiana, partly to mostly cloudy. Lows from 44 to 55. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with scattered showers. Highs ranging from 60 degrees in the north to 68 degrees in the south. Tomorrow, wind speeds of 10 to 20 miles per hour, with a minimum afternoon relative humidity ranging between 60 and 75%. In agricultural news, Congressional Budget Office analysts are meeting this week in Washington with USDA and private industry analysts. The session will review draft CBO supply and demand estimates for U.S. agriculture that will be used as a budget baseline for the new Farm Bill. CBO will release its baseline forecasts early in 2007. The administrator for the Farm Service Agency says more than 10% of all payments in the last fiscal year made to producers have been deemed as improper. Teresa Lassiter says she takes the issue seriously.
Improper payments is a very strict definition because it includes every piece of paperwork and every signature that is required to make sure that a producer is eligible for a payment. So this year, FSA did a very thorough review of our crop disaster program, our conservation reserve program, our direct and countercyclical program, our loan deficiency program, our marketing assistance loan program, and our non-insured disaster program. The outlays, the total projected outlays from the from the payments that were reviewed, are $25.6 billion. We found that we have, according to our definition of improper payments, that we have some $2.8 billion that we need to report as improper payments.
Lassiter says only 1% of all payments, $206 million, were incorrectly dispersed. Incoming Senate Ag Committee Chairman Tom Harkin is promising to hold hearings on the issue. Lassiter says the FSA is already taking steps.
What we are going to do is assure that we do a better job. First of all, we're going to clean up those 06 files. And then in the future, we're going to do a better job. And we've already put measures out there in place to make sure that we do a better job. We're putting checklists out in our county offices for each program for our program technicians to use when they sign an applicant up. We're going to require three different reviews of that checklist to make sure that those documents are actually on file. We set the computer flag back for eligibility on all phases of eligibility, and there are many. We set them back to no, meaning that for 07, nobody's going to get a payment until we make sure that those documents are on file. So we're doing everything we can. We're going to give more program training. We're going to do everything we can to get better tools out there for our employees, because that's really the only way we're going to turn this around is when we can give them more modern, updated equipment to work with.
FSA Administrator Teresa Lassiter. U.S. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke will visit China in December. The U.S. trade gap with China will be one of the major issues discussed. The officials will also press Chinese officials on allowing the Chinese currency to trade more freely. Meanwhile, USDA says Chinese purchases of U.S. agricultural and fishery products have increased more than 23% in fiscal year 2006 to $8.7 billion. Economic experts suggest that China's booming economy and exploding middle-class growth are fueling much of the increase. The PRC purchased $7.6 billion in U.S. agricultural products, including $2.34 billion worth of cotton and $2.4 billion worth of soybeans. Overall, USDA's November outlook for U.S. trade projects an FY 2007 agricultural trade surplus of $8 billion. The report projects a record $77 billion in U.S. ag exports and $69 billion in ag imports. Fiscal year 2007 began on October 1st. National Farmers Union President Tom Baez says health insurance for farmers should be a big issue for Congress in 2007.
You have probably the highest degree of farm debt caused by the lack of people being covered for health insurance. And when something happens, they have to take out a loan against their property or against their operations. It's huge. And it's for all of rural America. You know, it's not just affordability. Oftentimes it's availability. And it's pretty safe to say that it's tough to get people to come to and live in rural communities if you don't have adequate health care, if you don't have trauma care, and infrastructure to provide health care as well as the affordability. It's a major crisis.
Bias estimates that roughly 20% of all U.S. farmers do not have health insurance. South Korea says it has banned Kansas-based Creekstone Farms from sending further beef shipments after finding a 10-millimeter bone shard in a shipment. South Korea's National Veterinary Research and Quarantine Service expressed concerns about the safety of U.S. beef. The bone shard was discovered in a shipment that arrived on October 30th. South Korea says a shipment will either be returned or destroyed. And the International Grains Council has lowered its world corn production estimate to 688 million metric tons. That's 2 million metric tons lower than last month. The decrease reflects a cut in expectations for China and Kenya. World corn stocks are seen at 92 million metric tons, down 2 million metric tons from a month ago. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
The food and feed market for U.S. soybeans in the Western world has matured. Now, farmers, the U.S. soybean industry, and economists are looking for points of new food and feed growth. Todd Gleason has more on the potential demand for soybeans around the globe, excluding the emerging biodiesel market.
University of Illinois Ag economist Steve Sonkis says demand for soybeans in the Western world has matured, and it's unlikely to grow very much over the next 10 to 15 years in the way it's grown in the past. Demand for the commodity as a feedstock for vegetable oil and protein. On the other hand, he says major expansion in those same areas should come in Asia.
The other message is Asia. When we look at China, when we look at India, when we look at East Asia, Malaysia, Indonesia, large countries that have experienced income growth over the last 20 or 30 years. If that income growth continues, we're looking at major expansion at a global level, not quite doubling the need for beef, pork, poultry, aquaculture that we have today.
Sonka says the United States is just one of the big players in the global food market. The U.S. leads the world in the production of beef cattle and chicken, but follows China for pork and egg production, and India for milk production. Those animals must all be fed, and Sonka says the U.S. can step up to fill those feed bunks with corn and soybeans, but only if it remains the low-cost producer of those commodities.
I think a question for U.S. agriculture is how do you become cost competitive in this global economy? Our land costs are making us a high cost, not the highest cost producer, but we're certainly not low cost producers. How do we develop alternative farm policies that don't end up with us being a high cost producer when we have to compete in the world where the world price is determined by economics as much or more than by policy?
The fact of the matter on the soybean front is that it costs just about the same to import beans from the United States as it does from Brazil. That goes for most ports in the world. The U.S. has the better transportation system, and that keeps cost here competitive. The Brazilians farm on much cheaper land, and that keeps them competitive. The question is which nation, which set of farmers, will be able to find ways to stay the low-cost producer? China is already investing money in the Brazilian infrastructure, helping to build railways, and the governor of one Brazilian state has been known to say, "We'll pave our way out," as a reference to putting in new roads to ship soybeans to Brazilian ports. The United States is engaged in a farm bill debate centered by the George W. Bush administration on lower land costs. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Good afternoon, Greg.
Good afternoon, Dave.
I would suppose there wasn't very much traffic your way today, although I imagine farmers are waiting to see if they can get the flat price a little bit higher than it is right now.
That's it. We've had a nice uptrend. We were just looking. Corn has been up 14 consecutive weeks now, and we're off to a good start here for week number 15. So far, the thing to do is nothing and let the prices go higher. Obviously, that won't work forever, but it has worked for the last 14 weeks, and farmers don't need a lot of money yet, and the funds are still active buyers, so with more buyers and sellers, the price has been going higher.
First time that we've seen a 4 on a corn contract in a decade. What do you make of that?
I don't think there's anything significant. I mean, psychologically, I don't think that's going to slow people down. I think the funds realize that if we have any kind of weather problems at all or don't get the acres planted next spring, there's nothing magical about $4. We may be talking about something higher than that if something goes wrong with next year's crop or acreage numbers.
First day notice on Thursday, how might that play out?
Well, you look at the December-March corn spread, you know, traded out to 17 and a quarter cents today. So, you know, that should remind us that we're not out of corn. We're not going to run out of corn. There's piles on the ground, and nobody wants the December contract except for the funds. And now when first delivery day comes rolling around, they're going to realize that they don't want that corn either. So they're bailing out of those nearby months and rolling into other months, and the wide spreads are going to continue, and that reminds us that we're not going to run out of corn in the next 12 months. The following 12 months may be a different story, but the next 12 months, there's plenty of corn around.
Now, you've been impressed with the rally on the futures in the soybeans.
Well, it's been a follower. I was just looking here for the month of November so far. Corn futures have gone up 50 cents this month. The basis has improved 7 cents, whereas the beans have only improved 44 cents on the futures and no improvement at all in the basis this month. So I would have to say that beans are just a follower, and there's people saying, well, yes, but beans have to go higher because if we plant all this extra corn, that's less beans. And to some extent, that's true, but keep in mind we have a 565 million bushel carryout, according to USDA, and if we plant 7 million less acres of beans, that's at 40 bushels the acre, that's 280. So you cut your carryout down from 560 to 280, which is tight, but we can probably get by with that as long as we have good weather. But obviously it ups the odds on any weather problems. The market could be very, very volatile next year.
Your prices today?
Cash corn finishes the day at 373, January 380, and next fall 352. Cash beans are 672, January 676, next fall 718. Old wheat is 450, and next July, 462.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Thanks, Dave.
That's Greg Johnson of the Andersons in Champaign, Illinois. Someone from the Andersons joins us every Monday on the Closing Market Report.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. An investigator has denied deliberately withholding a handwritten statement by accused murderer Amanda Hamm that maintains that her car accidentally slipped into Clinton Lake with her three children trapped inside. Hamm's attorney says he was never given the statement, although it was shared with defense attorneys before a trial last spring that convicted Hamm's former boyfriend in the deaths. DeWitt County Sheriff Roger Massey testified he didn't intentionally withhold the statement. He says investigators wanted everyone to be on the same page. Hamm is charged with first-degree murder in the deaths of her three kids, who died after the car sank into about 4.5 feet of water in 2003. Legrone was convicted in April and is serving a life sentence without parole. While Champaign County Board Democrats remain at odds over their nominee for chairman, Republicans have chosen John Jay as their candidate. The board will vote for the next leader in a week. Democrats yesterday failed to reach a consensus between current chair Barbara Wysocki and county party chair Tony Fabry after a two-hour caucus last night. They'll meet again just before the county board's organizational meeting next Monday. Democrats hold a 15-12 majority on the board. Illinois Senate Minority Leader Frank Watson says he expects lawmakers to reach a compromise with utility regulators this week, slowing down an anticipated rate hike in January. Speaking at the University of Illinois today, Watson said officials from Ameren and ComEd are working with the legislature on a plan to phase in the expected increases of 40-50%. The House and Senate have 3 days left to approve such a plan. The fall veto session resumes tomorrow and adjourns on Thursday. Indiana education officials release high school graduation rates this afternoon for the first time using a new formula that officials say more accurately reflects how many students earn a diploma. The State Department of Education expects the new rate to be about 71% for the current school year. There will soon be a vacancy at the top of the United Way of Champaign County. Current president and CEO Tammy Lemke has announced she'll step down no later than March. She and her husband are relocating to the Chicago suburbs. United Way chairman says the hiring process will begin right away. Lemke has headed the charitable organization since 2002. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is meteorologist Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Mark.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Looks like over the weekend, Brazil got rain in most of the nation, but didn't see any in Mato Grosso do Sul, really, or Mato Grosso proper. Are they going to see any in the next 24 to 48 hours?
Yes, Dave, we do think that those areas of Brazil will be receiving more significant precipitation. In fact, the pattern across much of the central and northern corn and soybean areas of Brazil are turning active here as we speak, and an active pattern looks to remain in place here over the next couple of weeks. So even if they happen to miss out over the next couple of days, they will have many opportunities here coming up through the end of this week as well as the next week.
So you think that potential high pressure next week might not limit rainfall?
Yeah, we don't see any kind of strong ridge of high pressure across Brazil, and overall it's looking to be fairly normal to even more active pattern here from a rainfall standpoint across Brazil, and that will continue to keep them in very good shape here as we enter December and continue to wrap up planting across that area.
Boy, did Cordoba and Argentina see rain over the weekend.
Yeah, we saw heavy thunderstorms across the northern areas of Argentina, but not only in that area, but across the southwestern areas of Argentina as well, at least where totals were lighter, though. But actually, that southwestern area had been the one area that had missed out on rains of late, so we were kind of focused in that area of La Pampa, but they received around 0.6 inches of precip over the weekend, and that was enough to decrease kind of the last remaining dry pocket across Argentina. Now, with the good rains over the past several days, we do see more rains coming up about a week from now, and that also will continue to keep them in very good shape here as we continue to plant.
Here in the Midwest and also on the plains, it's going to turn colder, is it not?
Well, Dave, that's kind of an understatement here. It's going to turn dramatically colder as we go through the week here as bitterly cold Arctic air now beginning to ooze down into the northern plains will be flowing into the Midwest, the middle portion of this week, specifically here for Illinois and into eastern Indiana. We do expect the front to come through Thursday morning, and that will cause temperatures to crash as much as 30, even 40 degrees in just a matter of several hours across the nation's midsection here. And that looks to be the start of a much colder than normal pattern that will continue throughout the early portion of December.
Is winter kill an issue?
At this time, with our cold coming in, we don't see any kind of winter kill issue, at least over the next 10 days. You know, we will have to monitor things once we get in December, and with any kind of big Arctic air mass projected to come down into the middle portion of December. But at least with this initial surge this week and a couple of the other surges coming in next week, nothing looks threatening at this time.
Any areas globally you're keeping a particular eye on?
Well, China continues to have their issues from a dryness standpoint. That's affecting their winter wheat crop. Now, they did get some rainfall here over the long holiday weekend, but it likely comes too late here to cause any kind of significant improvement in crop conditions. Plus, that area is turning colder as well, and that's going to put the winter wheat crop into dormancy. And then it'll be a waiting game until spring just to see if there is any kind of significant improvement in soil moisture across that area.
Thank you very much, Mark.
You're very welcome, Dave.
Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. And that is today's closing market report. Remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, cash grain report, and weather on the web. Go to WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.